BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on BCY America. Before we get started with our guest and topic today, we'd like to welcome new listeners to Crosstalk, listening over WLUV 1520 on the AM dial out of Loves Park, Illinois, and its translator in Rockford 105.3 FM. So glad you could join us for the broadcast today and every day as we talk about the issues that impact us here across the nation. But again, special welcome to those listening over WLUV. Well, ladies and gentlemen, free speech is under attack, and it's often targeted by members of the left who want to gag the speech of those who espouse conservative values or to proclaim information that the left does not want to get out. For instance, look what's happened in social media. The voices of so many of the right have been silenced or earmarked with some sort of label. Look what's going on with the COVID or the shot. I mean, we've recently released a resolution here in Milwaukee County. It's been proposed by a supervisor declaring health misinformation, public health crisis that threatens the health and safety of Milwaukee County residents. If you give any kind of what they deem misinformation, that in itself is being declared a health, a public health crisis. If this resolution passes, well, First Amendment freedoms are under attack here across this nation. It's happening on many different fronts, and one of those fronts is speaking out on the issue of elections. Our guests today come addressing this very critical matter with a lawsuit that was just filed here recently in a case known as Wisconsin Family Action versus Federal Elections Commission. With us today, we first of all want to welcome Michael Dean, who's an attorney with First Freedoms Foundation. It's a public interest law foundation defending historic civil liberties and constitutional principles through litigation and education. Michael, thank you for joining us here today.
Good afternoon, Jim. Good to be with you.
Also with us today by phone, Jelaine Appling, who is president of Wisconsin Family Action. Jelaine, thanks for being with us.
Oh, appreciate the opportunity, Jim.
So, Jelaine, let's begin by learning about your organization that you represent, Wisconsin Family Action. Give us an overview.
Well, you know, thank you, Jim, for that opportunity, because I think a lot of people really don't always know, you know, what these kinds of organizations do. I'm going to take you back to the founding of this in a real quick way. In 1986, a group was formed called Wisconsin Family Council. It's actually another name then, but it was founded to give a Christian voice in Madison on policy and things like that. And it ended up being an organization that's organized like a church and things like a 501c3. Well, that restricts how much we can lobby, and thank you to the IRS, restricts how much we can lobby, and it certainly restricts how much we could do with elections. And so in 2005 or early 2006, we decided we needed more latitude. There was so much going on that we needed to be able to make a powerful difference in policy, lobby without, you know, all these restrictions, and also be able to do what we could to help get good people elected at all levels of government. Now, that's not the central purpose for our organization, but it is part of what needs to be done. And so we formed Wisconsin Family Action, and I know Mike Dean's going to talk more about this, but it's what we call a C4 organization by IRS regulations. And I want to point out, and you know, I realize I have our attorney here on this on the program as well, so he can correct whatever I might say that, you know, is not something he thought I should say. But look, the reason we have Wisconsin Family Action, Jim, is because of the IRS. It would have been nice just to have everything under one group and be able to do all we wanted to do with Wisconsin Family Council. That didn't happen. IRS rules won't allow it. So we formed Wisconsin Family Action. What do? We educate people on issues related to the God's plan for marriage and family, the sanctity of human life, and religious freedom. And as necessary and as appropriate and as lawful, we engage from time to time in elections. Now, normally we do that at the state level,
mm-hmm.
All right? But, you know, we have a lot of federal elections going on, too, and we've been looking at that and thinking, wow, there's times when we should be able to do that. But we got stopped short last year, and Mike will give you more details, but we got stopped short as we started looking at that on the presidential election and other things and say, wow, we can't do that.
And Jelaine, we're going to hit that issue in just a moment, but I want our listeners to also know that your organization, Wisconsin Family Action, you're not just out on some island out there by yourself. There are other sister organizations, if you would, state family councils and groups all across this nation that have been organized with many of the same purposes you have as far as impacting their state as well.
Well, and that's exactly right. Look, on this particular issue, we're just one of, I would say, thousands of organizations that will be affected by this, all right? And so we happen to be formed as a part of a family policy alliance, a family policy council at the state level. We're all independent, but we all work on the same issues and in much the same way with a Christian foundation, Christian basis. And there's almost 40 of us now, Jim, across the country. And most of the groups have both, you know, the what we call a C3 and a C4, like
right.
Wisconsin Family Action, Wisconsin Family Council. But you go beyond those state family policy councils, you get into organizations all across this country who are in the exact same place we are as Wisconsin Family Action. And, you know, they're organized to educate, they're organized to engage in policy, they're organized, as appropriate again, to engage in elections. And so, no, we're not on an island. We're just the ones that said, wow, somebody has to get clarification on this issue, and we stepped up. Because, so in that sense, you know, we're just a gap filler. We're standing in the gap for organizations all across the country. I'll say this also, that I found out recently that very few organizations really know what's happening, and they've been very surprised and alarmed by what we've been talking about.
So we're rewinding to the year 2020, very critical election facing this country, and you said, I've got to get engaged. I want to do something. So tell us about that.
Well, we did in 2020, you know, as the summer wore on and we saw all that was happening in this country, we wanted to get engaged. And I learned a long time ago, Jim, the safest way for us to do stuff is to call Mike first, not after the fact.
Right.
So I called him and said, you know, Mike, we're looking at doing such and such, and what do you think? And he said, you know, I have to look into it a little bit. And I think this was in August, as near as I can remember it, Jim. He called me back and said, hold everything. Don't you do anything.
Wow.
You can't, you know, there's an FEC regulation. There's been a court case. There's been something coming out of the D.C. Circuit. And he said, you just put everything on hold. Don't touch it. And so we immediately said, all right, we have to stand down on this. And, you know, as he dove into it and looked at it, to be honest with you, just got the picture got clearer, but I would say bleaker and a little bit scarier as we looked at what could happen to us and more so to our donors if we had proceeded with playing in a federal race.
So this is where we're going to pick up with you, Mike, here, because you said, whoa, put the brakes on this. What generated this concern?
Jim, thanks. Good to be with you. The way these kinds of constitutional cases develop in significant public policy issues is not in a vacuum. Interest groups such as Wisconsin Family Action, other groups with other philosophical and political perspectives from other directions, all organize these lawsuits for a particular purpose. And in this case, there's a group in Washington, I believe it's Citizens for Responsible Ethics in Washington, and always referred to as CREW, the acronym. They're on the left side of the spectrum, and they were looking for a specific result. The D.C. Circuit being located in D.C., of course, tends to be much more on the left liberal end of the spectrum among the circuits. And by the way, there are multiple circuits. We happen to be Wisconsin happens to be in the Seventh Circuit, which includes and these are federal circuits, which include Indiana, Wisconsin, and Illinois. The D.C. Circuit deals primarily with federal issues, as you might imagine, but it's a co-equal circuit.
So there's a circuit there, this D.C. circuit, and they had a case before them, which is this CREW.
Right.
CREW versus the FEC, Federal Elections Commission.
Right, and it grew out of their lawsuit to force the FEC to prosecute a group called Crossroads, which was Carl Rove's organization. This was also a 501c4 organization with the same classification under the Internal Revenue Code as Wisconsin Family Action. But there the similarity ends. Carl Rove's organization spent, I believe, in 1 year $17 million in what are known as independent expenditures. And, of course, that dwarfs Wisconsin Family Action. And in particular, Wisconsin Family Action, had they engaged at all, would have spent mere thousands of dollars. But the case was high profile because it was going after this massive organization on the right. And the D.C. Circuit, of course, this is federal law.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened with Jolaine's organization last year, they had been active for many years on the state level. And I've litigated very, very similar, very successfully, very similar issues under state law. And, in fact, one of our most successful litigations was with a different group out of Indiana. And in 2014, we had the state campaign finance law declared unconstitutional. That effectively ended a secret investigation against the governor and about 30 different conservative organizations. And but that was because we went to federal court, had the state law declared unconstitutional. In this case, we're dealing with the Federal Election Campaign Act, and or FECA, F-E-C-A, and so that's purely a federal action. So when Jolaine wanted to get involved with family action in the federal elections, it was a very different circumstance. We had to look at a different body of law,
mm-hmm.
and this CREW decision had literally just been released.
And what was it, what are the basic aspects of the CREW decision?
And this is a little complicated, but the way the campaign finance law regulates many different aspects of finances and campaigns, and I could talk a long time about why I think
cookies
that,
on the lower
yes,
shelf.
Yes, why I think that horribly skews the forum for free speech. But in that context, one of the ways the law controls what people do is to define either an expenditure or a contribution. So an expenditure would be Wisconsin Family Action buys a radio ad. That's an expenditure for some campaign speech. We call them independent expenditures in this case because Family Action or these other C4s do not coordinate or collaborate in any way with a candidate. The candidate doesn't approve, doesn't communicate with the organization. It's truly an independent expenditure, which means the organization can say whatever it wants, either for or against a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on the expenditure side. The contribution side would be donors or contributors who fund the organizations in order to provide the speech. Now, in the C4 organization, most contributors don't even know, and in this case certainly didn't know because Jolaine made the decision very late in the year, they would have no idea that any of their contributions would ever be used for any political speech. But here we're going to
go to
a short break.
Great.
We'll get back to that in a minute.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Mike Dean with us, Jolaine Appling with us as well. Here on Crosstalk, we're discussing a case just filed, Wisconsin Family Action versus Federal Elections Commission. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how primitive was early man?
Chris, early man was never primitive in an evolutionary sense at all. In the beginning, man was created in the image of God with great ability, even able to communicate with God face to face. All this was before sin, however, and we've been deteriorating ever since. Evidence continues to accumulate that long ago man was highly sophisticated, evidently even performing brain surgery. Skulls have been found with holes drilled in them for surgical reasons, and the person had survived. No, Chris, there never were primitive humans. There were some with less technology and not much education, but Stone Age cultures exist today. This is a level of civilization, but not an evolutionary stage, and it's been that way ever since, back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Michael Dean is with us, an attorney with First Freedoms Foundation. Jelaine Appling with us from Wisconsin Family Action. And talking about a case just filed in a federal court, Wisconsin Family Action versus Federal Elections Commission. Some of you may be saying, well, how does this impact me? Well, we're going to be getting into that here today on the broadcast and how this is very much a concern as to how this, you know, how these things are ruled and determined by the courts as to the impact upon donors. And Mike, you were talking about the contributions
Correct.
That are being made to an organization. And in this case, we're saying Wisconsin Family Action, who makes an expenditure to buy an ad, but there is a connection that they're making between the donors to the organization and the mechanism of that expenditure would trigger certain things.
Correct. And the statute that we're considering, this FECA, says that any contribution to an organization which makes over $250 a year, that's 250, that's it, makes $250 a year in expenditures must disclose to the FEC all the contributions, including the contributors' identities, names, and so on. In other words, disclose all donor identities who gave more than $200 or more in any year. And effectively, that means that if Wisconsin Family Action, in this case, had spent even just $250, bought a little Facebook ad, for example, advocating for or against a federal candidate, then at the end of the year, Wisconsin Family Action would have had to disclose to the FEC and put in the public record the names, identities, and amounts of contributions of everyone who contributed to the organization in the amount of $200 or more during that calendar year.
Now, friends, grasp those numbers here. I mean, we're talking if they spend $250 in a calendar year, that's an average of $20.83 a month for 12 months. But if you had contributed to this 501c4, a gift of $200 or more that accumulated through the course of the month, in other words, if somebody gave $20 a month that they supported the C4, that would trigger their contact information to be released in public records.
Correct. And the left knows this.
Yes.
And it's one of the lead cases that provided protection was actually the NAACP case against the state of Alabama in the 1950s, where the Supreme Court held that the NAACP fortunately did not have to disclose identities of donors because everyone knew that the Ku Klux Klan and the racist elements would attack donors and attack members of the NAACP. And so when FECA, the Campaign Finance Act, was originally passed, or this version of it in the 70s, the Supreme Court said, well, it's really not constitutional the way it's written, because no contributor could possibly know that his little $200 contribution is ultimately going to be used in any way, so he can't possibly be contributing it for a political purpose. And so the Supreme Court put a construction on the statute that said it would be constitutional as long as it's limited in its application that way. The FEC, then, the federal administrative agency, which administers these election statutes, then adopted an administrative rule. And for the last 40 years, this has been the regime or the practice or has been the law where these small donors to small expenditure organizations would never have their identities disclosed. But Crew engaged and brought this action in the D.C. Circuit, and the D.C. Circuit candidly simply ignored the Constitution, ignored Buckley-Vallejo, ignored the constitutional overlay, and looked at it purely on the face of the statute. What does the statute say? And I would liken this to Congress passing a law that says we want to build a highway, and we want to build it through your town, and it's coming right through your yard and your home, so deed us over the property. And you say, wait, the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment says I'm entitled to due process. I'm entitled to just compensation, and I'm entitled to be able to go to court and at least litigate and defend my rights. And if you went to and in this case, it was as if you had gone to the D.C. Circuit and said, well, the Constitution is not before us. The law is clear that Congress is taking your house, hand it over.
Wow.
And so when I read the decision, it was truly jaw-dropping to me that they simply ignored 40 years of constitutional construction on this statute. The other group that we were working with on this, the Institute for Free Speech out of Washington, had briefed in the Crewe case, and as soon as that decision was issued, filed a request with the FEC to issue a new regulation, but the FEC did not do so. So no one really knows what ultimately might be required, and that's why we call these kinds of cases pre-enforcement actions.
We'll get more into that in just a moment. Right. But, Jelaine, I'd like to ask you this, because you are genuinely concerned about donors to Wisconsin Family Action having to be disclosed. Share your concern with us.
Well, I'm absolutely concerned about that, Jim. Look, people give to us because they believe in what we're doing. They give to groups, you know, that's the motive behind the charitable giving or behind, not just charitable, but the kind of giving people do to organizations that are doing things that people believe in. And what they don't want, especially right now in this culture, is they don't want their names published. They don't want people, especially when you're giving to a group like ours, who's dealing with, and I want to repeat those issues, Jim, marriage, family, life, and religious freedom. And I say it this way, God's plan for marriage and family, which means we're talking about, one man and one woman, and we're talking about family according to God's standards. And so those are today very much lightning rods, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
So when people give to an organization like ours, they don't want their name run up the flagpole.
Right, and we've seen the net result of what doxing has done here all across this nation.
Well, and it's a very real fear. We have seen people have their businesses maligned and actually lost their businesses. We have experienced here in our organization from people who, for instance, back in the marriage amendment, who had tires slashed, signs in their house, in front of their houses demolished. We've had death threats. All of these things are very real. We're not fabricating the concern that donors have. And it is absolutely inappropriate that their names be disclosed simply because they donated to an organization, not specifying that their money go to some kind of a political action or some kind of an election message that we're giving. They're just giving to support the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we have this kind of situation where their names could be disclosed to the public and, with an open records request or whatever it would take, and off people could run, threaten their business, threaten their livelihood, and who knows what else could happen.
Right. So this is contributions to the C4, not the C3 organization. But, Mike, you had litigated a case in the Seventh Circuit in 2014 known as the Barlin case. And this seemed to have a different result. I mean, pretty much the same issues, but a different result than what came out from the Crewe case. So I'd like you to just briefly tell what was this case that happened, the Barlin case, and then we're going to talk about that collision that's happening between these two cases.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, and that one I litigated with the BOP firm out of Indiana. And in that case, we challenged a state statute with language that was virtually identical in defining expenditure and contribution. So the meaning of the language has already been litigated in the Seventh Circuit, which held that language was unconstitutional and could not be required to force disclosure.
So there's privacy.
Yes, could force a group to disclose. In that case, it was expenditures for political purposes, but the Wisconsin statute was held unconstitutional as applied. We drafted the final injunction that required the state legislature to amend the statute. Ultimately, the entire campaign finance chapter was repealed and recreated in compliance with the direction of the Seventh Circuit to provide clear notice as to what was or was not prohibited. And I'm happy to say that in the 5 or 6 years since that decision, the number of prosecutions, investigations carried on by the state campaign finance administrative agency have virtually, the number has declined and almost disappeared. Up until then, because of the vague language, the staff of the agency had effectively weaponized the statute against particular political viewpoints. And in that case, many listeners in Wisconsin, perhaps across the nation, will remember that District Attorney John Chisholm from Milwaukee and Kevin Kennedy, who was then director of the Government Accountability Board, initiated a secret John Doe investigation against Governor Walker and almost 30 individuals and groups in Wisconsin, one of them being Jelaine's organization. We did not know anything at all about this until John Chisholm, the district attorney, sent out armed assistant district attorneys to raid the homes of five different individuals. And at that time, we learned that, unknown to us, these authorities, using campaign finance law, already had subpoenaed all of these clients' bank records, their email servers, their mailhouse lists, their computer files, cell phone records, internet traffic, virtually every piece of electronic data out there on any of these organizations, law enforcement already had. None of these folks even knew it, and they justified doing this on the grounds of this statute, which we were litigating at the time, not knowing any of this was going on, but just coincidentally, when the issue came to a head, that the statute that they were using or to justify this investigation was declared unconstitutional, and that effectively ended the investigation. So these things are very real.
Yes.
And in this case, the FEC, because it's evenly split along partisan lines, did not issue a new administrative regulation clarifying what the agency was going to do in light of the Crewe decision, which therefore left it up to staff, which issued directives saying what we believe the staff intends to do,
right.
But that's what creates the risk. Who knows? And so Jelaine, appropriately for the protection of the donors to Wisconsin Family Action, simply declined to engage in any of that speech, again, which is ultimately what Crewe's objective in bringing the litigation actually was.
So we've got this conflict then between the Crewe decision from the D.C. Circuit and then the decision that came earlier, the Seventh Circuit, the Barlin case. They're at a collision course between these two at this particular juncture. And so right now, Jelaine, you authorized for this lawsuit to be filed last week.
Well, we did. Look, Jim, from my perspective, what the FEC was doing and what the liberals are wanting is to shut down organizations like ours all across the country. What's the fastest way to do that?
Hmm.
Cut off your funding,
yeah.
Right? And you cut off your funding when you scare your people by sheer intimidation. You know, hey, if you give to these organizations, no matter what, you know, you're going to have your name disclosed. So it was appropriate to get this going in light of the upcoming election cycle.
We're going to take a quick break here. Michael Dean with us here today. Jelaine Appling, Wisconsin Family Action versus Federal Elections Commission. So a lawsuit's been filed. What are they seeking? We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
VCY invites you to obtain an audio recording of the Gospel according to John as narrated by Brad Canterbury.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
John's Gospel presenting the words of Jesus, the way of salvation.
For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever...
You can share this as a gift or for listening over and over on your daily commute. VCY America is making available this narrated Gospel of John on 2 CDs for a donation of $12. Call during business hours 1-800-729-9829. That's 800-729-9829.
But these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you might have life through his name.
Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, and we're talking about an important case because you've seen the net result of what some of this doxing has done and the threats that have been made and the intimidation aspects that go on when one is disclosed as having supported a conservative organization or conservative candidates. I mean, look at some of the things that have happened in the state of California that has taken place, even with Proposition 8 and so forth, and people being exposed as to who was supporting this or who was doing that. Well, there's very much a conflict that's going on here between a Seventh Circuit a court decision that had come out and also the D.C. Decision that had come out. And so Wisconsin Family Action has connected with First Freedoms Foundation and also with another organization. I'm losing the name right now, Mike.
Institute for Free Speech.
Institute for Free Speech. You filed a federal lawsuit just last week, December 2nd, 2021. What are you seeking in this lawsuit?
Well, the first step, we ask for what's called declaratory relief. We ask the court to declare what the law is. Whether this statute is unconstitutional as we believe it is applied. And the first step is getting the government to tell us finally what they actually mean by that. We at least as the FEC staff has issued guidance, it is in conflict, I believe, with the Barlin decision. But at this point, all we have is a staff memorandum. We don't have an official rule from the agency. And so when the federal government responds, and issues and files its answer, at some point Justice Department will have to take a position as to what they think the statute actually means and requires in relation to reporting. Until then, because we don't know, we are not going to risk engaging in this speech and thereby risk having to disclose the names of donors. So donors to these organizations, to Wisconsin Family Action, are clearly protected right now, and I can speak for Jelaine. She's not going to disclose any names. She's not going to engage in this risk of campaign-related speech until we have a declaration. Once we know what the law is, and once we have a declaration that, as at least the FEC staff has indicated, guidance is unconstitutional, we will then ask for what's called injunctive relief, an order from the court prohibiting the FEC from requiring disclosure in this way as right now they've described it.
Now, there is conflict between the circuits, so this would really have the potential of going before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes, if in fact, let's and it's kind of a two-step process, if in fact the Justice Department comes in and says, well, the government's official position is exactly what the FEC staff says, this is exactly what we mean, then yes, we think there's plenty of law out there that is contrary to the D.C. Circuit, that controlling law, because, again, the D.C. Circuit did not get into the constitutional dimensions. So we think that decision is clearly in conflict with Supreme Court precedent, certainly with Seventh Circuit precedent and precedent for many of the other circuits.
Jelaine, do you feel like your hands are tied right now?
Well, they're tied in the sense that we can't do what we would like to do as it relates to election, getting people information about candidates in a way where we can come right out and say, you know, support or oppose this such and such a candidate. So, because, Jim, I want to make it clear, we regard the information that donors give us, their contact information, their names, their, all that kind of thing, that is privileged information. We don't rent, sell, loan, share our database information with anyone for any reason. We're mm-hmm. certainly not going to jeopardize that information for in any way for election purposes. But yeah, we at this point, until we get some resolution here, yes, our hands are tied.
And I think it's important too, Jelaine, to point out that the ramifications of the suit is not solely about Wisconsin Family Action C4, but this is on behalf of 501c4 organizations all around the country. Correct.
Right. And interestingly, Jim, especially in the wake of Citizens United, that court case that said
yes,
corporations can engage in electioneering, so to speak, most of the C4s are incorporated. We are. We're a Wisconsin not-for-profit corporation. And so they have proliferated in the wake of that Supreme Court decision. And so there are literally thousands of C4s out there, that especially in a year of a midterm election like we have coming up, you know, just less than a year from now, where we've got, you know, all 435 House of Representatives and what, a third of our state, of our U.S. Senate, up for grabs. Certainly those organizations are going to be looking for ways to engage in those elections and those races.
So, Mike, the case was filed last Thursday, December 2nd, 2021.
Yes.
What happens next?
We've also filed what's called a motion for a preliminary injunction. We believe that there are no facts in dispute, so the court can look at the law and rule. The Justice Department will file an answer, will set a scheduling order, and we are going to ask for an expedited briefing and hearing on this motion so that we can have some direction timely in advance of the 2022 federal elections.
If the CREW decision is allowed to stand, if there's no action taken against it, do you believe that there would be future ramifications for 501c3 organizations, that they might make the leap from C4s to C3s?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that, Jim. We call this the chilling effect. And in this case, exactly what is happening to Wisconsin Family Action, its speech is being chilled by this precedent. That's in the C4 area. The C3, interestingly, has already been permanently chilled. Most people don't know it, but the statutory classification legally under which churches are organized or classified for federal law is Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code. Up until the early 1950s, for over 150 years under the Constitution, the churches in America had routinely, and nonprofit organizations in America had routinely, engaged in political speech. And Jolaine can tell you, can go into great length about the Black Robe Regiment, Jolaine, or something like that. It was well known that the ministers were the leaders in the American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
The ministers were the leaders in the abolition movement. The ministers subsequently have been leaders in the desegregation movement, ending the horrific discrimination against African Americans. But that all changed in the early 1950s because Lyndon Johnson, president of the 60s, was a senior senator from Texas. He had, throughout his career, solicited support from churches, from nonprofits. But in, I believe it was the 1948 election, there was a young Catholic opponent, I believe, who organized a fairly serious effort among Catholic organizations to support his candidacy and oppose Senator Johnson's. Senator Johnson didn't like that. He was the Democratic Senate leader, and so in a voice motion, no legislative history, in a voice motion on the floor, he went back to Washington, D.C., and introduced an amendment to the federal tax code that precluded churches from engaging in political speech if they wanted to keep their tax exemption. And so these things are very real. Most churches now have just gotten used to it, and most pastors are afraid and actually feel guilty about talking about politics. But that was never the case until Lyndon Johnson engineered the change in the tax law, specifically in retaliation for a young religious individual who opposed him in an election.
And Jelaine, this is where you've been encouraging pastors, churches, you must speak out on issues.
Well, we have, you know, and it is not illegal for churches to speak out on issues. What the Johnson Amendment unfortunately does is restrict them and saying, you know, vote for such and such a candidate, or, you know, vote against such and such a candidate. Churches have great liberty to say, you need to vote. You need, here are the issues. Here's a biblical view of the issues. You know, they can even hand out voter guides and things like that. But Mike's right. The chilling effect was there, and they shut down a lot of the free speech. And I'm using that term in the constitutional sense. A lot of the free speech rights that churches had prior to that Johnson Amendment. And Jim, for the sake of our listeners, I want to point out that a C3 and a C4, here's how they're different. Donations to the C3 are tax deductible per the IRS, and donations to the C4 are not tax deductible. That is the primary difference between the two organizations for the sake of the IRS. And because those donations don't get a tax deduction going to the C4, the IRS doesn't care quite as much, or hasn't cared quite as much, mm-hmm. about what we say. Notice this is coming in from the FEC. Look, this is about intimidation. This is about squelching our ability to get a message out that helps people know who to vote for, helps them to understand what the issues are. That's a legitimate role for an organization like ours to play.
Our phone number,
totally legitimate role.
Phone number to Crosstalk today is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. If you have a question or a brief comment you'd like to make, pick up your phone, give us a call on our topic today, 800-733-9829. This was a federal lawsuit filed just last week. It was filed in Green Bay. And, Mike, has there been a reaction to this filing so far? Have you seen a reaction to it?
No. We've just done several press releases. And at some point in time, and some of the political sites, was politics and so on, and other groups that are interested in public policy like this have picked up on it. But candidly, there's so much other noise, if you will, and I don't mean that negatively, but there's so much other activity going on politically right now that it hasn't attracted a lot of attention. Another reason it hasn't attracted attention is very, very, very few organizations, as Jalen says, were even aware of this. And we're hoping to get a good precedent, or at least an injunction, so that they don't continue business as usual and find out on the wrong end of an FEC investigation that the law has changed from what it's been the last 40 years.
Jim, could I jump in
sure.
on the media side real quickly? There has been, I'm not trying to contradict Mike, but we track this stuff pretty closely, and we've seen in the Google feeds that the AP picked it up and sent it out to a lot of markets. I had a team member in here today said he saw it in his local Fond du Lac paper.
Hmm. Oh, excellent.
So if it happened late, Mike, it just those things popped yesterday.
Yes, and Jelaine, in fairness, I filed the lawsuit and went back to working on another one. So I don't pay as much media attention to media as you do, so thank you for that.
Our number 800-733-9829. Dave in Brookfield, Wisconsin, you're on the air. Hello, Dave.
Sorry, I had you on mute. Thanks for taking my call. So as a donor, I have two questions. One is, why do I care if they put my name out there? That's one question, because I don't really care if somebody knows my name. I'm giving a conservative cause. The second one is, if I don't care we shouldn't care whether our donations are tax deductible. You know, mm-hmm. if we're giving to the Lord, mm-hmm. if they take away our exemption, who cares? I mean, we should still give.
Okay.
That's my question.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And right now, the contributions to a C4 are not tax deductible anyways, but we are just a dozen seconds away from the break. So we're going to take the break and we're going to come back and we'll have our guest address those issues here. And so stay with us. We'll pick that up right on the other side. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Our telephone number, by the way, 800-733-9829. Why do I care if my name is out there? What ramifications are there? We'll cover that after the break here in 1 minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. I've talked about Frédéric Bastiat's book, The Law, many times over the years. And I urge all of you to go online and read it for free. You'll find it online. You can read it for free. He wrote it in 1850 when France was going through one of its many socialist revolutions. Bottom line, he says the purpose of the law is the defense of individual property, individual rights. It is individuals coming together collectively to defend individual rights. He says the law is perverted when it is used for greed and philanthropic purposes. Greed and philanthropic purposes. In other words, the government is used as an instrument to steal from one to give to another. The government becomes, and the law becomes, the exact opposite of what it is supposed to do: secure the property and freedom and liberties of others. That's exactly what's happening in America. This nation cannot continue down this path until Americans once again understand the constitutional, God-given purpose of the law, security and protection.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Attorney Michael Dean with us here today from First Freedoms Foundation and Jelaine Appling from Wisconsin Family Action. And so the questioner asked, so what if my name is out there? You know, I don't care. You know, I'm proud to support who I'm supporting.
And I would say that's an individual decision. It's commendable. But as a practical matter, every individual situation is different and has to make that decision for him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
I was just reading this morning, 1 Samuel, David of all people, to avoid threats, death threats by Saul, headed off to the Philistines, actually acted insane and acted as a traitor to Israel to avoid the risk of political persecution by King Saul. So if you want to say David was wrong, okay, but the reality is the scripture is full of examples where people make very practical decisions, and I don't mean pragmatic in a bad sense, but very pragmatic decisions. If you have people, neighbors or individuals or an employer who are adamantly opposed to your views, might even engage in physical violence against you, and you have family, you have young children. All of these are very, very individualistic decisions that you have to make. And I would not suggest this because you need a strong stomach, but if you actually wanted to go on the federal system and find the affidavits and the exhibits that were filed along with our lawsuit, you will find a vulgarity used against Jelaine and her organization and her supporters. You'll find death threats.
I mean, if they get your name, they're going to find your address, they're going to
yes.
find your phone number, your web, email, everything
mm-hmm.
else, and that's where these threats are launched. And, Jelaine, you faced that firsthand.
Well, we have. Look, on 30 years, we've had death threats. We've had just and even in recent months, we've had, you know, sometimes veiled, but sometimes much more overt threats to what I would say to bodily harm. You know, look, if they're going to come after corporations if they don't take the right position on some of these issues, Jim, they're going to come after mm-hmm. individuals. The left fears that people and entities, companies and things like that, that don't walk their line, don't agree with them. And so what they want to do is shut it down. And so they will not be above coming after an individual. Let's say somebody gave the minimum, $200 to this organization in an aggregate way over a calendar year. They are not going to look at that and say, oh, that's just, you know, that's just small potatoes. We're not, you can't, I don't want to overstate this, but I think it's probably a wrong assumption to say that they won't do anything. The doxing that is happening in this culture is real. Ask people.
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting kicked off social media. All of these things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to reiterate, we would never, ever put our donors in that place.
Yeah.
And that's why we're being so careful. And that's exactly why we filed this lawsuit.
And Mike, again, that these are contributions to a 501c4, so they're not tax deductible regardless.
Correct.
So to the other question there, we've got James calling from Tomah, Wisconsin. James, you're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I have, kind of a split question here. First question is, you know, how would somebody go about mitigating their risks in contributing financially, number one, to the political causes, but number two, more importantly, to helping to fund the lawsuits, because those are expensive. Secondly, are people being sought or allowed to sign on as co-litigants?
Okay.
Yes, at this point, the litigant is Wisconsin Family Action. And the case law, again, right out of the NAACP case in the 1950s, says that the real interested party is the donors, not the organization itself, but the real interest at stake is that of the donors and their privacy and their protection. And the court gave standing to the organization as a representative of the donors for the obvious purpose that if the donors themselves were required to file the action, then their identities would be disclosed, which was the very point at issue. Therefore, the organization which would like to continue receiving those donations or accepting individuals as members, if it were a membership organization, was therefore the appropriate stand-in. So at this point, we would certainly welcome what are known as amicus briefs in support, but at this point we don't need any additional litigants. We have the corporate entity that's the stand-in for the individual donors.
But, Friends of the Court briefs could be filed, and for those who would like to help support the efforts financially with that, what you're doing as well.
Yes. If they would like to contribute financially, they can contribute either to Jelaine's organization or to ours. We purposely keep a low profile, but our name's First Freedoms Foundation. Those donations, if you see fit, could be mailed to P.O. Box 2545, Brookfield, Wisconsin. The zip is 53008. Box 2545, Brookfield, 53008.
Okay, and WIFamilyAction.org, a website there as well. Boy, we've got just 90 seconds left. Steve in Mitchell, South Dakota, you're on the air. Are you there? Okay, they are gone. And let's try Brad in West Dallas. You're on the air, Brad.
Hey, Brother Jim. Just wanted to say, since the left is so hot on chilling free speech and free association, maybe they should consider including people who donate to Antifa and Black Lives Matter or participate with them. Hmm. Let's be honest about this thing. So that's just my little thing for the day.
Thank you.
Bye.
The bird gets buttered on both sides.
Yes, realistically, mm-hmm. the rule does apply to them. But as you know,
selective enforcement.
Yes, it's selective enforcement. And the troops, if you will, our side, the people generally who tend to support conservative causes, do not go out and burn down Kenosha. They do not attack their neighbors. They do not make threats or vulgar comments. In that sense, it's the personal threat is generally a the door swings one way on that, which is why we're generally far more concerned about the conservative or Christian causes and preserving their privacy and protection.
Mike, we're out of time today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Elaine Appling from Wisconsin Family Action, thank you also for joining us here today. And I know you covered people's prayers.
Amen.
Great. Thank you, Jelaine. Jelaine Appling from Wisconsin Family Action. By the way, again, just quickly, it's WIFamilyAction.org. WIFamilyAction.org. There's the Institute for Free Speech, their website, IFS.org. And then also there is First Freedoms Foundation, P.O. Box 2545, Brookfield, Wisconsin, 53008. Our time is gone. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.